Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, we're headed to Big Sky Country and speaking with the maker and owner of Western Cider, based in Missoula, Montana. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This is a fun episode because not only are we going to be speaking during the featured conversation with Western Cider about the ciders that they have there and what's happening in Montana, but we're going to begin that conversation talking about Michael, who is a co-owner of Western Cider, his trip recently down to Texas where he was hunting gator, and we'll find out what they recommend to pair with gator. I mean, how often do you get to talk about that? So it's rather enlightening and kind of a little bit of off the beaten trail from Cider Chat, but that's what we're all about. Speaking of which, if you're new to this here podcast, welcome. We do go all over the map in the U.S. and the rest of the world. This is episode 295. We are in season 6 and soon to be in season 7 when we reach episode 300. So as of this episode, we are 4 episodes away from episode 300, which is super crazy. And as such, regular listeners know that I've been kind of being a little bit of a reminiscing in my approach to all this. And so what I want to go to next is we're going to head to season 2. And it's a little clip from a pretty famous cider maker out there in the world, based in France. Everybody's, I'm sure, out there in Ciderville guessing right now. You know who I'm talking about. Maybe. Anyways, yes, it's Eric Bordelais. And what we're talking about here is about an ice perry that he made. So I was at the cidery in 2016, and we were actually in the bottom of his castle, which he's been renovating these past couple of years. And having visited him a couple times now, I could tell you that it's really moving along. So that's exciting for him and everybody. And at the very bottom is like a dirt floor and these like cool curved ceilings. He does a lot of storing of his bottles because it's perfect. There's like air circulating in from these like vents, and it's just a nice temperature, like that low temperature for cider, but not so low that it would do any damage. So we're going to hear us talking about the aging of that, which I think is really important to know about cider. Some ciders need to be drunk pretty much straight away, like many ciders that are in a can. I really wouldn't let them go more than a year. But ciders that are in bottles and often have the bitter sharp and bitter sweet, much like what Western Cider's doing, you know, you could let them age for a while. So let's roll to that clip. This is from season 2.
Ice perry from 2013. And then when do you consider this, something like this would be ready? Or it could be
you
ready now?
You tell me?
Yeah, okay.
No, not
no,
now.
No?
No.
You, how long?
Because
did you...
It's too delicate. Mm. I don't want to go in more than 10% alcohol or 11 or 12. I think it's too much. Stop at 6 or 7, depends mm-hmm. on the vintage, and the rest is sugar, but it's too delicate, so people like when it's rich, but I prefer delicate and wait 10 more years.
All right, so Bordelais made this ice perry in 2013. He's looking at least 10 years to age it, so keep an eye out in 2023. He's not looking for high alcohol. He doesn't want that really robust flavor. He wants something much more delicate, primarily because he loves pairing his products with food and wants the delicacies of the pear itself to be projected forward versus like a big heavy oak or some of the more robust flavors, or even like the not the heat necessarily of a high ABV, but you can kind of tell, you know, it's kind of gets you a little heady when you're drinking an ice cider. More often than not, that's what we're having. It's kind of unusual to have a ice perry that is in the 11, 12, 13% range. It's going to just kind of get you there a little bit quicker than something like a 6%. Totally different beast. And obviously, it's going really well for Bordelais because people covet his products. I've done a number of episodes with Eric Bordelais. You just heard from episode 58 titled H and Pears. It was part two of a two-part series. And then going up to episode 172, so that must have been season four, I'm going to guess. Yes, season four, that would be right. That was titled Cider Tasting with Bordelais. And there was even a bonus audio clip that went out to the kind patrons of Cider Chat. Those are the folks who sign up via the Cider Chat Patreon page, and that was called Juice to Bottle. So I will put links in the show notes to those episodes. And of course, if you become a patron of Cider Chat, you get to listen to that little sneak peek into his mind, the Bordelais mind. Such an interesting fellow. I absolutely adore him. Now, one of my favorite things to do is to talk about our sponsor, the Northwest Cider Club, whose fourth quarter box for the year 2021 is almost coming to a close, so you have a bit more time to get in and order your box today. And our special guest, Western Cider, has two ciders, one in the Discovered box called The Farmhouse. And I actually have this bottle right in front of me, and we're going to be talking about it with Michael and Kira coming up shortly. But this cider wowed me, absolutely wowed me. The list of apples on here are so long, it would just take me about 5 minutes to read, and they're all really nice select varietals that would just make anyone happy to just have one of those ciders in a glass. And it's like a reason for me to go to Montana. And I suspect that they are both listening right now to me saying this. And I'm just giving you like a fist pump to the sky. Like, you knocked it out with this Farmhouse. It's absolutely delicious. So if you sign up for the Northwest Cider Club, this is in the Discover box. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different ciders. Also from Western Cider in the Elevated box is their outstanding Dry and Dandy Sparkling Cider. And this is in a 750 ml bottle. And I just want to say I am over the moon for Western Cider. It's absolutely fantastic. I've only had two of their ciders, and I would say I have not been disappointed. And that's not always totally true, I'll be honest. So if you want to get in on this, taste a little bit of a Big Sky Country, was coming out of Montana, Idaho, and one special cider from Oregon out of Bauman Cider, where they're using McIntosh from Montana. Go to nwciderclub.com/podcast and order your box today. Don't wait. Order it today. There was so much abundance in Ciderville. That's all I could say. And as such, I want to go back to season two once again, as I am continuing to reminisce before we hit episode 300 in just like 4 or 5 weeks here. This is from episode 89. It is the intro to the number one most downloaded episode on Cider Chat thus far, titled Reusing an Oak Barrel for Cider. And you're going to hear a couple different voices here from different cider makers. I'm all over the place, but you'll see how much fun I enjoy kind of producing this episode and playing with the sound.
Your camera?
I have my recorder.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to talk to you about, you know, barrels and stuff. Barrels. 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 You know, this is not just any brewery. It's Exhibit A.
How much is it weighing?
It's a beautiful barrel. I didn't realize they were so pretty.
Yeah, they're really nice. The hoops are, they're nailed in, so even, I mean, but you're going to keep using it for liquid, so they're not going to dry out.
Certainly are.
It's like nerd love at its finest, you know? It's
he
like,
knows all
you
about it.
You get your first barrel, right?
Episode 89. Oh my goodness. You first heard from Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider up in Ontario, who is the barrel man himself. There's many episodes on Cider Chat, many titled Ask Ryan, because we have two different series with him. And then you heard a little bit from Matt of Exhibit A Brewing, which is in Massachusetts. I bought a barrel from him. And you also heard from William Groda. He is a cider maker at New Salem Hard Cider here also in Massachusetts. I hooked up this barrel from Matt, and I also got one for William too, and we were there picking it up, and we were just like in this like barrel mania. So that was the beginning to episode 89. Again, there'll be a link in the show notes to that. And wow, season one, season two. Next week, I'll have some clips from season three. So we are counting up to 300 episodes of Cider Chat.
Walking through the orchards.
For many years, regular listeners of Cider Chat know that this time of year, the first weekend of November, you'll be hearing me talk about Cider Days. It's something that I have been part of since 1994. I began teaching cider making back then. Did that for about 17 years, believe it or not. And it's been quite an experience. But more recently, after we celebrated our 25th year in 2019, we had a pandemic. And like a lot of organizations, the pandemic has created some changes. And we've had some big hits for the Cider Days committee. So I'm going to now roll a statement from the Cider Days committee. You'll be hearing from Al Sachs. He's been chairing the event, someone that you may not know, but he has been behind the scenes for quite a while, chairing the event, doing a lot of the programming that you may have experienced if you came to 2019 and going back a number of years. Al is a person who really set that up and did an amazing job of coordinating times and doing a program that would really meet everyone's needs. So he speaks for the committee on this, and we're going to roll with that next.
Once a year for 25 years, cider makers and enthusiasts have made their way to Western Massachusetts to attend a three-day event. These past 2 years, we've had to adjust to the reality of the COVID-19 pandemic. Safety has been our main concern, and in early 2020, we knew that we were not going to have our traditional gathering. In response, we developed the Cider Trail, which is a self-driven tour of local cideries and orchards in central and western Massachusetts. Please know that during 2020 and 2021, the Cider Days Committee has been meeting regularly. Like many organizations at this time, we began a process of introspection, reevaluation, and re-envisioning. We took a look at the mission of Cider Days and how best to continue. We examined and assessed our structure, roles, and financial status to sustain and maintain it into the future, despite the loss of one of our biggest sponsors based in Franklin County. We remain undeterred from our original path laid out over 25 years ago to celebrate cider making, and the orchards in our area. For historical context, the Cider Days Committee has been the driving force behind Cider Days since its inception. It started as a celebration of the book, The Art of Cider Making by Paul Corenti, with photographs by local fermenter Charlie Olchowski at the home of Judith and Terry Maloney at their pioneering West County Cidery in 1994. In reviewing our in-house history, we noted the original name for the event was simply Cider Days. As such, moving forward, we are reclaiming this title to reflect the inclusion of both our wider regional, national, and international collaborators and community. Do keep an eye out for the ilovecideredays.org site rolling out in the coming months. A seminal part of our history is that the Cider Days Committee has always been a grassroots volunteer organization focused on putting on the best and most creative cider-focused event we could imagine. Our leadership bubbled up from those volunteers able to meet monthly throughout the year to produce this event. Our volunteers worked their tails off each year, putting in incalculable hours, organizing, planning, and staffing the event. We do programming, design, marketing, public relations, development, and fundraising, recruit volunteers, and all the hundreds of little tasks it takes to pull off this annual event. The Cider Days Committee is made up of cider enthusiasts and professionals who volunteer their expertise and time to elevate the caliber of experiential and educational offerings. We are very event-focused and did a great job each year pulling off exciting and educational Cider Days. The downside is that we did not spend much time building our internal organizational structure to ensure its efficiency as Cider Days expanded in scope each passing year. Much like a late fall apple that ripens over time, so do we, and we're excited by the seriousness given to ensuring the Cider Days vision, organizational health, transparency, and longevity. Moving forward, the Cider Days committee will be a more formalized organization with officers, bylaws, and a budget. We fully intend to be leading Cider Days into the future. Yes, there will be a Cider Days 22. Grow with us as we re-envision our organization with a commitment to our local roots and as part of the international cider community. Thank you for your support.
Up next is our featured conversation with the folks at Western Cider. You're going to be hearing from cider maker Kira Bassingwaite. And the first person you're going to hear from is Michael Billingsley. He's the co-owner of Western Cider. And we're going to go right into his recent trip to Texas and hunting alligators. So grab a glass and join this chat as we roll out to Missoula, Montana with Western Cider. Just wanted to make sure we're all good to go here. And yep.
How do we sound?
It's good. You sound great. You look great.
Woohoo!
No clash.
I'm tired. I don't look tired.
Well, obviously, I want to hear how you did with the gator hunting. I mean, my goodness.
It was fun. Old family friends that I grew up with. You know, our moms were pregnant together, so we've been friends since in womb. And she had three boys and my mom had two boys and we're all in a line. We're all like all a little less than a year apart, all strung out. So we grew up together. I haven't seen them in a while and they live in Houston now. I grew up in San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
And so, this is kind of for my 40th birthday. They had a big Texas hunting adventure planned for me. So I went down and we went teal hunting for waterfowl for ducks a few days along the coast. And then we went gator hunting, got a couple gators. And then we went fishing out in the Gulf and caught a bunch of fish and had a big fish cookout and just did a bunch of Texas stuff, ate barbecue. And
how do you cook gator?
The most popular way is to fry it. It's most of the meat is on the tail.
Okay.
Kind of cube it up and fry it and make like a gator po' boy or something like that. The smaller ones, sometimes people will like roast them whole, mm-hmm. like over a spit, kind of like you would a hog.
Mm-hmm. How about the tenderloin? What does that look like? Is that big and chunky?
Basically, the whole tail is like a tenderloin.
Oh.
Majority of the meat comes off the giant tail and you butcher it very similar to like you would cut the tenderloin off of a deer or a pig or something
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. You just follow the, mm-hmm. the tailbone all the way down. There's two big chunks, real long chunks on the top of the tail and then smaller, mm-hmm. two smaller chunks off the bottom of the tail that you cut off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was a fun trip, but I'm a little, whew.
Well, what Western cider would you have with gator? What would you recommend?
With fried gator, man. Oh, what would you have? That dry and dandy would be good. The dry and dandy would be really good with the gator tail. I think Wixen would be nice too.
Oh yeah, with sweetness.
This little dry dandy right here.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of hot sauce and stuff on it too. I think the Wixen or Wixen cider would probably be really good with that. It's got a little more sweetness and some good acidity cut through the fat. That'd
cool.
be
awesome. That'd be enough. All right. Well, let's get into this then. So we were, just talking about the dry dandy, but let's back it up a little bit and talk about the backstory of Western Cider. when it was launched and a little bit about both of your backgrounds here. So I'm going to hand it over to Michael first to kind of take that lead, and then we'll go to Kira.
I guess starting way back from the beginning, I watched the made-for-TV series Lonesome Dove with my dad and brother when I was born in 81. I think it came out in 86 or so. So I was like a five-year-old kid and watched the movie Lonesome Dove. And it's this epic journey of these two Texas Rangers that basically make the trip from South Texas up to Montana to start a cattle ranch. And I recorded it on VHS and then watched it every week all through my childhood, and just became obsessed with the state of Montana and wanted to move to Montana ever since then. So I moved up here for no good reason other than that. Really, I had no business coming up here. Moved up here and have never left. And I've always been interested in agriculture and farming, ranching. I love the outdoors. I just always wanted to do something that involved me being outside and working my hands and being outside. And so I work for my business partner, actually, is Matthew. He's also he also is from Texas. We've been friends since we were late teenagers. And so came up here and I started working for him, and I actually worked together for at this sheep ranch for a while, doing ranch work and working sheep. And then I got my first orcharding job at Forbidden Fruit Orchard, this great little spot in Paradise, Montana, where they grow peaches, which is pretty wild. About the only place in Montana where they can get away with growing peaches. But I really fell in love with orcharding then. I love the long-lived perennial crop. You know, it's you form a relationship with the trees, and you really, you know, you tend to them throughout every season over years and years and years. And it's just a lot different type of farming than plowing the ground over and planting the next thing and then the next thing every year. So I really just fell in love with that. I'd never really even thought about orcharding before I got that job. I just kind of decided that was what I wanted to do. And then found out about the rich history of apple growing in the Bitterroot Valley. You know, the Bitterroot Valley used to be apple king. You know, we used to have more apples in Washington, which is hard to believe. But just a really neat history, and apples grow beautifully here. And you see all the old relics from the old trees and from the old orchards. In Missoula too, even up in the Rattlesnake where I live, it used to be all orchards. And so I really started focusing in on apples. Right about that same time, I tasted my first true cider that wasn't, just a commercial kind of just whatever, but it was like made with actual cider apples, and it was a true cider, and it just blew my mind. And it was like, how come I've never tasted this before? And then I started reading about it and figuring out that, well, it takes a specific apple to make a good quality cider, just like wine takes a specific grape to make a fine wine. And that's where I just kind of just was all in. And I was like, well, I need to grow that. And so that's kind of how it started for me. I just kind of been obsessed ever since. And that was like in 2000 and oh, when I started working there, it was 2008, I think it was, right before my daughter was born. And so then my wife and I, decided we were going to start this orchard together. And, we found a piece of land down in the Bitter Valley and planted our first trees in 2012. And then, started Western Cider in 2016, something like that. I lost track. And that's kind of the general run of it.
And so interesting story that a TV series would inspire you, but that's like so many young kids. You see something and it just sticks in your mind. I'm just wondering, is there anything that you bring from your Texas roots up to Montana that has really informed your palate? I'm going to go in that direction because I imagine there's a lot of different things. But, you know, I think of Texas as being you could get some pretty good food down there. And
The food's incredible.
Food and cider.
My folks still live in San Antonio. So I bring my kids down and we go visit every year. And yeah, it's every time I go there, we go to the Hill Country. And it's just an eating, drinking adventure every time we go down there. Yeah, the food is amazing. And I was always a beer drinker. And I drank a little bit of wine here and there, but I was mostly a beer drinker until I, you know, got older and I got to where I didn't really like drinking beer that much anymore. And then I started drinking wine more. And I do most of my drinking with food. And I don't really like drinking beer with food. So that's kind of when I switched to become a wine drinker. But like I said, I'd never had a cider that I really even liked. Actually, the first cider I tasted that I really liked was my friend Lee McAlpine at Montana Cider Works. Mm-hmm. She was one of the first, which is pretty cool. And she's been kind of a, I don't know what you call it, a mentor in a way, or just a friend and someone that I looked up to. And she made her North Fork cider. That was the first one that I tasted that really blew me away. And it was made with cider apples that she had shipped across the whole country from Steve Wood at Poverty Lane. It was like, mm-hmm. Why are you shipping it from way over there? Like what? And he was like, well, you can't get them, you know? And at the time, this was in like 2009 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, still her best vintage of North Fork too. It's just exceptional. So yeah, that was kind of where it was just like, well, we got to grow some of these things. And it's just been a constant battle to try to figure out what grows here in Montana. It's, you know, it's been a long road, and I work a lot with the ag research station it's Montana State University. They have a ag station in Corvallis, which is just south of my orchard. And I do a lot of work with them. I like science a lot, and it's like a giant science project, really, you know, trying to grow an orchard and growing all these new cultivars of apples that haven't been grown in the area. So it's been a giant science experiment, but a lot of fun, a lot of heartbreak and hardship too. A lot of crying in the orchard. It's kind of my time to go.
She's laughing right now, but you can't see the people out there in Ciderville, but she's kind of laughing about it. Hey, we've all been crying in the orchard. It's a good place.
Yeah, it's my time. I lay in the aisles and weep, you know, when things don't go well, but I love it. It's, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right on. Well, I'm going to go over to Kira now. How about if you share with us a little bit of your backstory on cider? And you are the cider maker at Western Cider, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I grew up right here in Missoula, Montana. So I'm from Montana and love it. I moved away for culinary school right out of high school. So I moved to New York and kind of got some exposure there. And that was after culinary school. I worked for a bakery managing their farmers markets, which I was dealing with baked goods for the most part, but I met a lot of people in the agricultural world. They're just going to all the markets all over New York City, as well as Westchester. And I lived up in the Hudson Valley. So kind of in a mecca of just amazing produce and a growing season that I wish we had here in Montana. But I met a number of people and spent a lot of time in orchards in New York. And that was the first time I realized just how many apples there were. And that is where I drank my first ciders as well. I don't remember the name of the first cider I ever had because I was 20 or 21 and brand new to drinking in that way. But I did fall in love with wine when I was in culinary school, just the idea of pairing wine with food and how the two together could elevate both products. Mm. And I loved that. And so I was really interested in wine, but because I was so young, it was hard to really like pursue that in a way. So I got back into food a little bit, but the whole time that I was out in New York, I missed Montana and wanted to move back. And so I wanted to kind of transition from food into alcohol, and Montana being such a grain state, I just wanted to get my foot in the door. So I started working at a distillery and started making whiskey and gin and these types of things. But I was always kind of curious about making cider, and I had a grand plan of, you know, starting an orchard and I started looking into cider apples and all that kind of stuff, but not nearly as seriously, because then I found out this guy was doing it already. And yeah, I was able to get in touch with these guys, and it was just sort of a gradual and natural transition of moving into the cider world from the whiskey world. So I didn't have to go far, just about a mile down the road to go from a distillery to working with Michael and Matt. So I feel really fortunate, and it's been an amazing journey so far. So,
geez, I love your background. I mean, I'm thinking you went to the CIA?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Culinary Institute of America. And the fact that you have a background in food at that level, and now you're fermenting the apples, geez, boy, that's just a match made in heaven. Once again, you know, over and over again, just totally elevates the whole experience, right? Food. But we'll save that a little bit for a little bit later. Let's keep on focusing in on the ciders here. So you have this orchard. It's outside of Missoula, right? Is that what I could imagine?
Yeah, it's Stevensville, so it's about 34 miles south of Missoula, so not too far.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the tasting room then. The tasting room's right in downtown Missoula. It's not a really big city, but it's big enough. If I was going to walk outside the tasting room door, or maybe even from your window, What would it look like for folks who are listening from like Japan right now or Australia? What would they be able to see just walking outside the front door?
Yeah, it's a pretty special spot. It took a long time to find the right building in Montana. Here you can only sell what you produce on site. So we couldn't go get a warehouse, you know, on the edge of town and produce cider there and then have our tasting room closer to downtown. Mm. So we had to find a building that was all in one, which is really challenging. Mm. And I looked for almost a year. I mean, I was sending letters to people, just knocking on doors, trying to find something. And then, found this place, Bald Eagles. It's right on the river. It was flying over the top. And it was like this, kind of moment.
Yeah.
And it used to be Pacific Hide and Fur. The building was built in the 50s, built like a tank. And it's about 7,400 square feet on the main floor. And then it has got a full about 7,400 square foot basement below too. Hmm. And it sits right on the river and it's on an acre lot. And so the whole, you know, most of the building is for production. The whole basement is production. And then we have a pretty good sized tasting room up here, and then we have a huge outdoor area. We put in a little demonstration orchard. So I have some trees on trellis that create a break or a screen rather, off the back porch. So the back like deck covered area, is pretty much enclosed with trellis trees. And then there's a big grassy area that has freestanding trees to kind of simulate the two different growing styles that I have out of my orchard. Mm-hmm. And then we overlook the Clark Fork River, and there's views down into the Bitterroots. You can see Lolo Peak, which is like the first big mountain on looking south into the Bitterroot Valley. So it's a great spot. It's pretty perfect for our situation.
What kind of press are you working with? And is that out at the orchard or on site at the tasting room?
Neither. We work with Ryle, which most people in the area know, Northwest Mobile Juice. You've chatted with him before.
Yeah.
Ryle and I are buddies. We actually looked into, I almost went into the apple pressing business with him. We went down, looked at this one in Canada together. And so we kind of started this journey pretty close the same time. And so I've known Ryle since the beginning of this. And I've never I would love to have a press, but we don't really have the space, and definitely didn't have the money at the time to get one. Hmm. And so I've just been using Ryle ever since, and it's been nice to not have to worry about that.
I talked to a lot of people that use Ryle, and he's just awesome. Yeah. Home mobile unit.
It's nice. I mean, it's a really, really nice, really expensive setup. We wouldn't be able to afford that setup, so it would be something smaller, and then it would just take forever. And so it just makes sense to use him. It's great. So we'll either press at my orchard, but for the last couple of years, we've done all the pressing here at the cidery, just on the side of the building. Like I said, we have an acre lot, so there's lots of space, and we have good drainage over there and all that.
So let me get an image here, and I'm going to actually hand this over to the cider maker here.
Yeah.
Just because you're managing a lot of the juice kind of coming in, right? Is that being pumped down into the basement then for the production? And how high are the ceilings? And a little bit of that view.
Yeah. So our cellar has about 16-foot ceilings, a little sloped in certain areas.
Nice.
So we have a number of stainless tanks, and we have flex tanks as well. And so typically we're pressing outside and pumping that juice into flex tanks and then bringing it into the cellar and then transferring it from the flex tanks into the stainless. And so it's sort of a double transfer operation, and some juice will end up freezing and pulling throughout the year so that we can make some of those ciders. Our Montana Macintosh, we source from a number of orchards around the state. And so we'll keep those orchards separate sometimes, or be particular about the blending of that. So, and we only have so many tanks. So in order for us to produce the volume to keep up with that, it's helpful for us to be able to freeze some of that juice and pull throughout the year. Everything is transferred into those flex tanks initially.
Cool. Montana Macintosh, you know, this is something that is really coming more to the forefront of what Macs do in Montana. And I see that, I think it's this one, maybe both of the ciders that I have from you both have Macintosh in it. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, and how you are choosing the apples, the select apples that you have? Because you have a pretty nice variety in the ciders that I've received. And so how's that working for you?
Yeah, so the two ciders that you have there are Dry and Dandy, which is a pet mat style cider, and then the Farmhouse. Those are everything except for the Macintosh is grown at my orchard. Mm-hmm. And then we did blend in some Mac on both of those. They actually have some Mac in them too. And the Macintosh come, like Kira was saying, from a bunch of different orchards, all around really. Well, mostly in the Bitterroot Valley, but we do get some from up on Flathead Lake, which is the other really great little microclimate that they grow. They're most known for their sweet cherries. They grow a lot. That's primarily what they grow along the east shore of Flathead Lake. But there are a few orchards and one good size apple orchard that grows quite a bit of Macs that we get from. And then there's a lot of old, like a turn of the century orchards that aren't really, or haven't been, you know, commercial orchards for, you know, probably decades. And until we were, I started snooping around the Bitterroot and looking at, counting trees and on people's property and then go knocking on doors kind of thing. And now we'll source from like seven or eight different, orchards. And yeah, like I said, some of them are old rogue orchards, but sometimes, has the best fruit.
But you have, select varieties in here: Golden Russet, Harrison, Caval Blanc de Hiver, Baldwin, which is, you know, a really beautiful apple, not always highly available, Ashmead's Kernel, Hudson, Golden Gem. I mean, it just kind of goes on. These are really nice apples that you're able to use here. Can I assume then that a lot of the ciders that you're making are using not necessarily culinary apples per se, but are more towards the bitter, sharp, bittersweet styles of apples? a variety?
Yeah, and like for that Pet Nat, there are some, I think we had two French bittersweets, if I remember right, in that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that one is there's more sweets and sharps, old heirlooms in there. And then like the farmhouse is pretty, besides the Mac, I think it's pretty much all bittersweet, bitter sharp. So that one's, yeah. So we're going for different styles of cider. Mm-hmm. We have made, Pet Nat ciders before out of, the more bittersweet fruit, on small trials, and it didn't care for it as much. For that Pet Nat style, we really like the more acid-driven, super fruity, acid-driven ciders. Mm-hmm. It can be drunk more young, whereas like the farmhouse really it's not terribly good when it first ferments. It really needs to mature before it starts getting good.
What year would this one be then? Is this from 2020? I have the farmhouse in my hand. It's 2020.
Yeah, that's from 2020 harvest, and it just got released now, just
okay,
recently.
Right. Is that going to be in the cider box coming out of the Northwest Cider Club? Is the farmhouse?
Yeah,
in it?
The farmhouse. Yeah, both of those will be in the cider box. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Cool. I love the labels and everything. You know what I really love about your label is how much info you're giving the consumer here. You know, the person in the store, you're able to see all the different apple varieties. You tell when the trees were planted, which is super cool. That gives us a scope of what you're doing, even the rootstock and the elevation that you're growing your trees in. It's fun, delightful. There's juggling. I see. Well, it looks like I see Michael's juggling, and Kira, is that you on the side there too?
Yeah.
Juggling, yep. I just got these in right before I went live with you, so I'm kind of catching up. Yeah, the delivery just came. And then the Dry and the Dandy, which is a sparkling cider, it's just really fun, whimsical, a guy in a hammock with apple trees over, and it's kind of being uncorked and pouring out. And really nice descriptor. I mean, you know, everything that you want on a bottle to kind of tell you about it, except that, you know, we can't say what year it was made, right? Yeah, but we can conjecture on that close enough.
Yeah, we couldn't quite, they wouldn't let us call it a Pet Nat, so they'd change it to sparkling too.
That's a ridiculousness.
Isn't it? So yeah. Frustrating.
Right. But
yeah, that's how my partner Matt, he does all the design work. He's been doing, he was designing t-shirts in Houston when he was like 15. So he's been doing it a really long time and is just crazy talented at it.
He's got it down. Yeah.
Yeah. He whips up amazing designs for any little like one-off thing we have. It's always like way over the top. He's crazy talented. So he always makes it look good. You know, we always know it's gonna look good. We got to make sure it tastes good.
He's got it down. He's got it down. And you have two different sizes. You have like the 750 and then this must be like a 500 here, 500. The farmhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. Ian, the first year we started bottling all of the estate ciders, we did them all in 750s. And we just found that format is kind of tricky to sell through our distributor. There's not a good spot to put it in a lot of like the grocery stores and different places. Mm. No one knows where to put it. And like the cooler section, a lot of times the 750s around here anyways, they won't even fit. So they just end up getting put in some random little hole of whatever. I mean, like when we first had them out in the grocery store, I was with my daughter and I were at the grocery store and we looked for a half hour and I couldn't find it. Huh. And I called Matt and I was like, dude, it's not here. He's like, no, I know it's there. I talked to the distributor. They said it's there. So my daughter and I are running around searching and we never could find it. And then finally, you know, Matt went later and sent me a picture and it was just in the most bizarre spot in the grocery. It's a little grocery store. So
what
we're like,
do?
No wonder it's not selling. I'm like, no one's going to spend half an hour, you know, trying to. So, so this year we're switching some of our estate ciders into 500 mil. And that way they'll be with our other 500 mil bottles and over in the cooler, they'll be, you know, people people will be able to find them.
Right, right. Well, it's a difficulty. I mean, you're not alone in that. I mean, anywhere in the world, you'll have that problem, even for the, French. So, yeah. So is it primarily all glass, or are you doing any cans?
We do cans as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do 6-pack, 12-ounce 6-packs, mm-hmm. and then we do the 500-mil bottle and then the 700-mil bottle.
Nice.
And then, half barrels and 6 barrels of kegs, too.
The clarity on this farmhouse is just, glistening. So I'm really excited to try both these ciders. I'm overcoming a little bit of a head cold here, so I'm going to just wait for that. Otherwise, I would have cracked this open while I was on with you. You know it. Anyways, I will, and I will let everybody and yourselves know my thoughts on it. I could tell already I'm going to love it.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. So I want to kind of... I want to talk about the orchard, but first I want to just talk about Montana and Missoula. Because, folks who don't get up to that region, and I have been in Montana, but it's been a while. I have to admit, cider is not the first thing that comes to one's mind when you think of Montana. And yet there is this long history of homesteads that had apples and, you're benefiting from some of that history there. So what is the local thirst, and how are the locals receiving cider? And is that more Missoula folks or outside of the area coming in? Well, what has been your experience doing Western cider in that way?
Yeah, I think, at the beginning, for sure, no one, there's a really rich apple history in Missoula and the Bitterroot Valley in particular, mm-hmm. and then other pockets of Montana as well. But everyone thinks of cider. When you say cider, they think it's, fresh juice. Mm-hmm. And in the fall here, mm-hmm. it's really fun. There's big harvest parties. Partner Matt, him and his wife used to caretake the Moon Randolph homestead, which has an orchard on it. It's in town in Missoula. It's just a super cool, magical place. Mm. And it has these almost 140-year-old trees now. Wow. And I used to volunteer and help prune when he was there. We'd have this prune the moon, and it was a big pruning party. And then they have a fall gathering every year, and they have an old antique apple press, and everybody comes and press apples and brings apples. Mm. And people have parties all over town where they, in the fall, bringing apples and pressing apples. So apples and apple presses are really big here and in the Bitterroot. All the old timers and throughout the Bitterroot all have an apple press in their garage. And so, that is a really neat history and culture here. But not that many people were fermenting it, or people would ferment it, but they wouldn't be fermenting it well. So it didn't taste good. So when we were building out Western Cider, I can't tell you how many contractors, people that would be working on the project would give me a nudge and then be like, "Hey man, have you ever thought about making something with alcohol in it?" And it's like, I'm not building this huge facility for fresh juice. That's what this is.
Right.
But the whole thing is alcohol,
Yeah.
And so it was a big learning curve, to education was huge at the beginning, to explain the process and that, we're a licensed winery and it's all fermented apples. That's what
so
it is.
Do you have a quick, actually both of you, do you have a quick elevator pitch when people say, what is this? What's cider?
I'm not quick with anything. Long-winded. Maybe should you be
there? good.
I usually just say it's normal to hear the term cider and think of fresh juice, but I just kind of more talk about that there is cider was America's drink, and we've lost sight of that, especially in Montana, being a grain state. I mean, we are beer drinkers and whiskey drinkers here through and through, and
big time.
Even just over the last, 5 years, there's been a huge transition overall as far as Montana as a whole accepting cider and also thinking of cider. I mean, you see the cider coming into the state of Montana from other places, other, you know, Oregon and Washington are recognizing that people will drink cider here in Montana now. So you are seeing a transition, but I mean, that is new. That is very new. And I think it's common across the country for people to hear cider and think fresh juice. So definitely, I think my spiel is always, you're not alone. A lot of people think that's what it is, but more to talk about that, you know, if you want to talk about America's beverage, cider really was it, because it was so accessible. You know, everybody had an apple tree in their backyard, sort of thing. So, yeah, I think it's an easy conversation to have, and one where, you know, I didn't necessarily know that until I was in apple country in New York. I also called it cider. You hear mulled cider forever as a kid, you know. So, yeah.
I think because there's such we're up there at the top of breweries per capita. I mean, just in Missoula alone, I mean, I have lost track. There's so many breweries. Yeah. We drink a lot of beer in Montana. Mm-hmm. And so, and with cider, you know, hard cider, they think of it as more of a beer. It's like you brew it, you know, and people think of it more as a beer. Mm-hmm. And so when we started Western Cider, you know, my original plan, it was going to be this little farmstead, kind of like, you know, I make cider at the orchard and they're only in 750s and it's like super dreamy, and idyllic, but in reality, it was like, oh, no one's going to know what this is or buy this. And there's no way I'm going to succeed at this. I knew I didn't know it at the beginning, but it became apparent very quick. And so that was why we chose to transition into Missoula and partner up and start this larger facility to have more education, more outreach, and start with six packs. It's more in that beer format. It's on the shelf in the grocery store, in the gas station. It's widely distributed. It's in kegs, it's on tap. And that is what allows us to make all these fine ciders in bottles and all the, with the interesting apples, because we start people on those six packs and we get them interested in understanding what it is.
So you're doing modern cider and more like traditional style cider at the same time. You're able to do the turnover, and then maybe these are like the farmhouse is more of a small batch. Very familiar.
You know, the hope is that we're already seeing it. Because we have a big following now here in Montana and people recognize us and know we make good cider, now they're willing to try that $20 bottle. Whereas before, we were never going to sell it.
Mm-hmm. That's smart.
And especially in Montana, you know, I love Montana, but we are, you know, what? 5 to 8 years behind like what's going on in like Portland, you know? So we go visit Portland, you see what's happening there and you're like, oh, sweet. So now we know what's going to happen here in the next 5 to 8 years, you know, it's kind of, so.
Well, you're doing pretty good, because I think like Portland's like 20 years ahead of all of us. So if you're only 8 years behind, you're cruising. Yeah. Right on. Yeah. So let's go back out to the orchard here. It sounds like you have a little bit of a high density orchard and then, and not too, a little bit of both.
The original planting was all high density, all trellised, you know, bud nine rootstock. And then I have a lot of different, of the Geneva rootstocks as well. And then, my next phase of planting was, M111, Bud 118, so, you know, quite big freestanding trees, but still planted pretty close together. I have a 14-foot rows spacing, and then my between tree spacing is only 8 feet, so pretty close for 111 or 118. We don't get as much vigor as you would in other places, so they won't be You know, I just don't have as much. You just don't get as much vigor out of a tree here.
Is that because can we hear? Like, I know that there could be really strong winds in your area, but I'm not sure if that's true for your orchard. And what about the soil? What can you give us a little profile there?
Yeah, it's really hit or miss. I have you know decent topsoil in some areas, and then in some areas it's next to none. As I was visiting Kevin Zielinski's orchard.
Easy Orchard, yeah.
And Easy Orchard, and he was I was just dumbfounded by how huge his trees were. And he's like, well, yeah, I got all your soil, you know, because there used to be a giant lake over Missoula, Lake Missoula. Oh. And then the big ice dam broke and pretty much swept all the water and soil out of here and dumped it on his place, you know? So
We have a little phone ringing in the background here.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm talking to the listeners who are.
Oh yeah.
Our future listeners.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's, a lot shorter. It's a short, very intense growing season. You know, our summers, we only get about 6 inches annually. We get, we're like a high desert. We're bone dry. And
so you must see some really, high sugars then from the apples.
We do, yeah.
The bricks.
Yep, for sure.
Cool.
But yeah, it's a short, very intense growing season. You know, we're very far north, so our growing, in the peak of the summer, sun up is at, 4 something in the morning and sets at 10 something at night. It's a long, intense, very hot day. Mm-hmm. And then it's because it's so dry, we get really, really cool nights. So it's a short season, but it's very intense. And the issues we've been having lately have been just these erratic cold temperatures. Or it's like last fall was we got pretty devastated. It was just an abnormally warm fall. We weren't even getting freezes at night all the way through September and into the first part of October. We hadn't even had I don't think we maybe had one like slight frost, but I mean, it was just super warm and then unseasonably warm. And then out of nowhere, we had -8.
Do you get dumped with snow too? Like, is it, what's your snow season in the winter? How long is that?
It just depends, the year before last, I was picking apples in snowstorms. Whereas
I'm not sure what that means, Michael, but no, I mean, what that says about you, but were they frozen on the,
No, it was, the apples were fine. It got cold enough to snow, but it wasn't like such a hard deep freeze that it ruined the structure of the apples. Good. Were fine.
Yeah. So you could get early snow, because I'm thinking, I'm talking to you from New England, and we could start having snow in November, and it could go all the way into April.
Yeah, same thing.
Same thing. So you would have snow out on the streets of Missoula, or does it, like in Denver, does it come down and then it's gone like the next day?
In the early season, it tends to do that, but. Okay. Once we're into winter, I mean, it'll be snowy and then stay snowy for like the whole rest of the winter for, a couple months of white. If we're lucky, I like it that way. But
I mean, last year, October, I think we got more snow in October than we did in November and December, January combined.
Yeah, we had all our really cold and then it was like a mild and sunny.
I got all my cross country skiing in October. And then some in March, and that was pretty much
And then it snowed late, too. And
then,
so it's just been kind of, the last 3 years have been really abnormal. Mm-hmm. We've been getting our cold temperatures at the wrong time. And same this summer, though. Like, we got, we had, the hottest summers we've ever had. I mean, everyone in the Northwest, but we had all our heat in June. Usually it's rainy and cool in June, but we had August weather in June. And then the second half of August was feeling like September. Second half of August was beautiful. So yeah.
How is the harvest looking this year? How are the trees and the fruit?
Man, everything that is, that has fruit on it is looking really good. Okay. But that October deep freeze I was telling you about, we just had this really mild fall, and then -8 out of nowhere. And the trees just weren't anywhere close to prepared for that. Mm. And so we learned which ones are really cold hardy and which ones aren't. I lost a lot of trees. And then some just didn't fruit, killed the buds for this year. But the trees are okay. Mm-hmm. But then certain cultivars are just totally toast, died all the way to the ground. So, so I got a lot of replanting to do, but that's kind of every year.
Yeah.
I have over 50 cultivars. So, you know, I wish I had, you know, a quarter of that, but I just didn't know what was going to do well here and what wasn't. And so kind of spread it out over a bunch of different ones. And I plant new ones every year that I don't have, just because I have a bit of a sick obsession, and I just want to know, you know, that there might be some great cultivar out there that I don't have that I should, you know. So
I love that.
It's a constant. And then, you know, I will, it, ones that don't do well, I'll top work and change over to a different cultivar. Uh-huh. Unless they really didn't do good and totally died, then I have to rip them out. But yeah, like I said, it's been like a giant science experiment.
It sounds like you've just gone head over heels for, you know, growing apple trees, which is a little bit of a different trajectory that you were on originally coming from Texas. So it's so cool to hear your passion for the trees, and I could see what you're doing. I've been on your website, which is beautiful, and see the photos there of the orchard. It looks fantastic, what you have going on there.
It's a cool spot. Yeah, it's a pretty special place.
So I'm kind of curious, because I want to really, you know, convey how difficult it is for somebody who's never been to Montana to get an idea of that. And I know you probably have a lot of tourists coming through from Missoula. It is a destination. There's a lot of outdoor activities to have or to be had in Montana itself. Could you think of something that would kind of surprise people, that they'd be a little bit of a misconception about Montana, but once they come into Missoula, they're like, oh, hey, I didn't know that.
We have internet.
Yeah.
And we don't ride horses to school, you know.
We do have,
some people do.
Some people do.
Yeah.
We do have bears in our neighborhood.
Yeah, we have bears. I mean, we're right in the middle of it's the five valleys. I mean, we have mountains all around us. Western Montana is a very different landscape from Eastern Montana. So that's something I think people always picture. Well, there's maybe different stereotypes that people are picturing. We are in the mountainous region of the Rocky Mountains. And so it's like you can see snow on the mountains for a lot of the year. It's not until the dead of summer that you don't see that snow anymore. There's lots of recreation and it's rural. You know, you can go to a trailhead and it's packed with cars, but you get 2 minutes on the trail. You don't run into anybody. I mean, it's pretty amazing in that way. But
it's the public land is like, the public land is the biggest, attracted to me. I'm just that. Growing up in Texas, you know, it's all private. Mm. There's very little public land. There's like state parks and stuff, but it's, you can't get on a horse and like ride for days, let alone hours. It just doesn't, unless you're on someone's private ground, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, it's that's what just attracted me. And that, I mean, that's why I came up here. It's just, you know, you just don't get that.
So I'm assuming that you do ride, Michael, you ride and go horseback riding, right?
Yeah, I do. I worked as an outfitter.
Okay.
So I used to guide, summer trips and then, hunting trips in the Bob Marshall Wilderness, which is just just 4.5 million acres of wild, roadless, you know, no motors, no wheels, no nothing. So you're on foot, either your own feet or the feet of a horse or a mule.
Right.
For days, you know, you can ride for days. And that's, I think that's, for me, what makes this place so special.
Yeah, I could feel it. I mean, that is part of the romanticizing of Montana, is like the horseback riding and why people go out to ranches and do that. Kira, are you also a rider?
No, I'm not. I think growing up in Montana, I think coming back, I've learned a lot from people who aren't from Montana about why Montana is so great. I came back and I met all these people who weren't from here, and they have this grand appreciation. And so I think over the last 8 years of being home, I've kind of rediscovered Montana. I mean, my family has land just outside of Glacier National Park. So I grew up in an area that just, it wasn't abnormal to see just spectacular scenery. And I took it for granted as a kid. So It's been really nice to be able to recognize that and be able to appreciate this place now as an adult. There's so much activity to be had. And we are really fortunate in that way. You can drive 5 minutes and you can hit a number of different areas that are quiet. But then we also have a decent, town here, like with a downtown that's lively and has incredible music and arts. And so, it's just kind of the best of both worlds, at least in Missoula. And, also over the last few years of just driving around the state and realizing how big it is. And it's still so rural in a lot of places, but it's just a good mix, I guess.
That was Kira Bassingwaite, the cider maker, and Michael Billingsley, the orchardist and co-owner of Western Cider. They got it going on in Missoula, Montana. Definitely making some outstanding ciders. I can only imagine where they'll be 3 or 5 years from now. Holy smokes. I mean, such a passion, so enjoyable. And if you want to get a taste of Montana, well, you could order directly from them or get a whole bevy of ciders from Montana by ordering via the Northwest Cider Club. Get their Big Sky, the last quarter of 2021, their box. Go to nwciderclub.com/podcast and order that box today. I think they're going to be closing out around November 17th or so is probably the final time that you could get your order in for Montana ciders. Delish. Oh, unless I forget, there is a bonus audio for the patrons of Cider Chat with Western Cider. We're going to be talking about the orchard, what to plant, what not to plant, some tips for people getting into cider making. Now, I put out these audio snippets to the patrons because they're the ones who are supporting this listener-supported podcast. And without these fine patrons, this podcast would not be on the air. So think about it. If you have gotten some value from this podcast today or over the years, please do consider to become a patron today. Certainly as we're rolling up to episode 300, support your Cider podcast and Cider media. Go to Cider Chat's Patreon page. That's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And if not that, well, there's always a donate button at Cider Chat. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms. We like orchards.
having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards,
having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider. We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!